A very good morning to you, my dear listeners, and thank you for joining us this Friday morning. So how is your Friday morning? How is the Friday morning feel this morning, wherever you are in this beautiful land of the brave? So, yeah, certain various part of the world, even various part of the country is actually getting cold slowly by slowly. And, well, and if you're on the road, taking the loved ones, a small one to schools, or you going to work, make sure that you are following the traffic regulations. You are safe and everyone around you is safe. So, yeah, good morning. And welcome to Eagle FM. And this is, it's very good. It's a pleasure, being in your company. And thanks for joining us and making us your number one choice this morning. Yes. And, my name is Michael Chiavelli and you are tuned into Unpacking the Day. So the show where we dive deep into the stories, events and issues that shape our world. So this show is all about breaking down the headlines, exploring the context behind the news, and understanding how it impacts our lives. So whether it is the latest development in politics, business, culture, or social issues, we're here to make sense of it all together. So, but it is also not just about, but it's not just about us talking, it's also about you. Share your thought, your opinion and perspective on the topics that matter most to you. And know that this is your space, to unpack the headlines and get, to the heart of the stories. So Friday morning at the 23rd of May, 2025. And, on this day in Africa, what do we have? Anything? Do we have an event, any significant event on this day in Africa? Yes, in 1929, Joe Modise was born on the 23rd in 1929. Who is Joe Modise? Was a key figure in South Africa's struggle against apartheid. So he served as the commander of Umkhonto weSizwe, the armed wing of the African National Congress, and later became South Africa's first Minister of Defense in the post-apartheid era. So he contributes, his contribution were vital in both the liberation movement and also in actually establishment of the, of a democratic South Africa. And while still in South Africa, and on the 23rd of May 1994, following its first democratic elections, South Africa officially joined the Organization of African Unity. So this marked a significant moment in the country's reintegration into the continental and international affairs after decades of apartheid-induced isolation. So the move came shortly after Nelson Mandela's inauguration as the president and symbolized South Africa's commitment to Pan-African cooperation and the broader struggle for unity and liberation across the continent. So, and today, which is not particularly, it's not necessarily in Africa, it's a World Turtle Day, Kahima, you know. 23rd of May is also recognized as a World Turtle Day, an internationally observed event that raises awareness about turtle conservation. So while it is not uniquely African, many African nations participate in activities and campaign to protect native turtle species, reflecting the continent's biodiversity and conservation challenges that we face. So Okajima, Okajima, en escuyao, nene, es cuyo Okajima, you know? Nene, es cuyo Okajima. Alright, Okajima, en escu. Yeah, so, yes, today is the World Turtle Days. Yeah, so, maybe conservation, as I said, for biodiversity, and also, to make sure that, every animal, whatever sort or whatever type, is protected. So thanks for coming through. And today, the 23rd of May, Friday, what is our thought for the day? What is our thought for the day? He who has no enemies has no friends either. He who has no enemies has no friend either. So the proverb suggests that if someone never faces opposition or conflict, so they might not have formed deep, meaningful relationship either. So this is because standing up for your beliefs or supporting your friends can sometimes lead to disagreement or adversaries. So in essence, having enemies can be a sign that you are actively engaged in your relationships and principles. So rather than avoiding conflict altogether. So he who has no enemies has no friends either. All right. So that's our thought for the day. This Friday morning. So, and if you're just joining us, you are tuned in on Unpacking the Day. So we will be back after this.
Omutia, with the Kirokabuna, Imatina, Omjo, Chicago Shafat and Anana, Longishifa, Yais, Yikemoshiwana, Iamoyao, Otaingo Botisamwini, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Omjika, Saisanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupitramo, Ikelefem Media House, Way 20 Mimeha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira seoma, konara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu, heari jamano tano, oni haji. Ike lefem, so ae.
Revolutia University September Intake 2025. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, level 4. A 1-year program, full-time all campuses, certificate for enrolled nurses, midwifery, accredited level 6, a 2-year program, full-time in Windhoek, Kurenkuru, Kompat, Wavish Bay, Katima Mulilo, and Otapi. A diploma in environmental health science, level 6, a two-year program, full-time in Windhoek. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, 4-year programs, full-time in Windhoek, Kurenkuru, Kompat, and Kompat, Wavish Bay, and Katima Mulilo. A postgraduate diploma in mental health nursing, level 8, 1-year program, full-time in Windhoek. And a postgraduate diploma in community health nursing, level 8, a 1-year program, full-time in Windhoek. So the application period started on the 1st of May to the 30th of June 2025. So for more information, call 061-225463, 225463 or 061-225462 061-225462. The Virtual University, where everyone is an achiever. So, and you are also an achiever in your own right. So hopefully you are. A very good morning to you, and welcome to today's Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveli. I will be with you until the hour of 9:30 until the hour of 9:30. So I will definitely be with you. All right. So, okay. All right. So now I want us to today on Unpacking, really, I want us to dive into issue of, how do you call that? Diplomatic drama, that unfolded during the meeting between, U.S. President Donald Trump and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on Wednesday, the 21st of May 2025. So what went wrong during Ramaphosa and Trump meeting? If you watch, the news, definitely, it didn't go, probably according as it planned, maybe in case of South Africa. So what was supposed to be a routine meeting, you know, aimed at, those meetings are normally aimed at strengthening ties between, two nations, turned into a contentious, if you like, contentious showdown, you know, and, that event, it's really making waves, when you look at every media house, and it's making news. And let's see if we can highlight, some of these issues, coming out of that meeting the media is on about. So let's start with a bit of a context so that we understand what we're looking at. So the President Ramaphosa, President Ramaphosa's visit to Washington DC, was meant to build, you know, if you like, to build bridges. So, you know, that there has been that, the relations between South Africa, trade relationship and normally relation generally now, between a bilateral relations between those two countries has been tense a little bit. So, you know, that South Africa, put in, you know, that genocide case against Israel, you know, they are against what is actually Israel is doing in Gaza, and America is supporting its close ally, Israel. So there's so many things that's actually going on rather than just exactly what is going on between these two countries. So the President Ramaphosa visit to Washington, as I said, you know, it's meant to kind of build now those bridges, you know, an opportunity now to discuss, where you discuss now trade agreement, you know, clarify misconception about maybe South Africa, you know, and you promote that mutual interest between the countries. So, but what happened? Instead, the meeting actually took a surprise turn when Trump confronted Ramaphosa with some discredited claims about so-called white genocide in South Africa. So the shift, you know, from no more diplomas as we know, to confrontation, has raised really several critical issues. And maybe let's look at some of those, issues as portrayed by the media, political analysts and things like that. So look at some of those. Yeah. Now, so one thing that, I think has become a worrying trend in Washington DC is that that Oval Office meeting, that Oval Office where normally in that Oval Office is where you have the media, when you talk to the media. So I think it has become worrying now when we see, it played out, in that Oval Office meeting, that disinformation taking place, or disinformation becoming a center stage. I think the worrying thing is that there's that rise of disinformation in diplomacy, if you like. So disinformation, I mean, disinformation means that, you know, spreading of made up or twisted stories, as if they were true. So, and in this case, the so-called white genocide, in South Africa is a perfect example of that twisted information or twisted stories about, of something that is not true. So, and that's also play out, in the Oval Office, where the media was, where everybody was actually, and, South Africa was not prepared. Yeah. So, but when we talk about now, so Syria, when we talk about the white genocide, so-called, put that in inverted comma. So the white genocide in South Africa, that even that has been debunked. It has been debunked, you know, even South Africa's own crime, data, their own crime data shows that violence on farmers, violence on the farms, affect people of every race, not only the white. So, and there simply isn't any evidence of targeted campaign against white farmers. So it's really just a disinformation, which are really made up. And as I said, these are twisted stories that made to be true. So yeah, yet, you know, these false stories keep popping up and blow up by the far right in both in South Africa and America. So, and even given airtime. So this is also given airtime by high profile medias and figures. So it's something that absolutely not, well, as I said, it has been debunked, even by South Africa's, crime data and other sources is that this is not actually true. So it's not something that I can stand up in the court and I say it's, myself and say it's not true. So I'm just following, information that say this is, but as much as we know, we are close neighbors here. We would have, if something is going on in South Africa, we would definitely know quicker than the Americans. Yeah. So, and why does this matter really? From here, we have seen something. It does matter because once you introduce a fake narrative, the conversation actually shifts from the real solvable problems of joblessness, problems of energy shortage in South Africa, for example, also for Namibia, problems of rise of crime. So it moves away the tension, you know, these fake narratives move away. Now it moves the conversation, the real conversation, you know, to focus to endless debate over an invented crisis. So that's a crisis actually invented. It's not something that is really real. So, and instead of now discussing ways to boost, maybe to boost trade, to improve educations or strengthen healthcare, you know, as you have seen, leaders find themselves actually spending precious time on refuting lies. You know, he find himself time and time refuting lies, which I think he wasn't prepared at all, and that not only wastes the opportunity for constructive talks, it also makes it harder to, it makes it harder also to rebuild the trust, so between the countries as well. So now, think about this. Imagine two neighbors, yeah? Two neighbors trying to work together on how would I put this? Yeah, on a shared shared fence. Let's say, for example, we have a shared fence. But one of the neighbors start accusing the other of poisoning their well. Okay? So maybe it's in the village, you know? He's accusing now the other that you actually poisoned our well. So without no proof, despite no proof, all right, suddenly fixing the fence, it's not the priority anymore. You understand? It's proving your innocence. Now it's not about fixing the fence anymore, but it's about proving your innocence, you know? So that's exactly what happened when really issues between the U.S. and South Africa got sidelined. They got sidelined by baseless accusations. So, and in international relations, when trust breaks down, so when that trust breaks down, it takes a long time. And maybe a change of administration and a lot of effort. Yeah. To put it back together again. So yeah, that's something that is being emphasized. What you see is that there is this rise, the rise of disinformation in diplomacy. Yeah. That, people or countries, or these politicians, or leaders of certain countries could actually focus on a false narrative, on a fake narrative, and run with that, and absolutely run with that. You know, and we're seeing that around the world. You know, in some conflict that is so they can a false narrative can be created, and run with that false narrative. To create the conflict that is going on. So it's becoming now a big, it's becoming an issue in the world of technology and new AI. So you never know what is actually true anymore, because anyone can create any fake story or disinformation. So we have to be very, 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 very careful. Even ourselves, the kind of information that we consume. And sometimes we see this in our own country. So a study can go out, could be fake, devoid of any truth. And once it's out and you have read it, even if sometimes later on people said, well, the story that was about this is not, for a couple of days you have been believing that was said it was true. Or maybe later on you haven't seen the second story that comes out talking about that it wasn't true. Yeah, so you believe a false narrative. You know, you're made to believe. Sorry, it's not that you believe, you're made to believe. So we really have to, even when you consume informations nowadays, you have to double check where it's coming from and whether it's really legit, or it's just, you know, information that, or just some kind of fake informations to, and there are agents, are people who actually create this kind of information to destabilize. Even within political, our political dynamic in the country. So, yeah, you can see that. So, yeah, so the other thing, I think the other issue coming out, that showdown between Trump and Ramaphosa, is it's a feeling of, when you listen to the media and those political analysts, there's a breakdown of diplomatic norms. You know, now, so you know that there's that a rule book of how you conduct all these meetings are being conducted. I think that has been thrown out of the window. So diplomacy is a bit like choreographed, you know, it's a choreographed, it's a well choreographed dance, you know. So you expect a certain steps, So you expect certain step, polite greeting, respect listening, private discussions, and then a joint statement, joint statement highlighting the shared goals. So it choreographed, very well. But instead, in what we have seen, what we have witnessed was a diplomatic ambush. So, Ramaphosa was really ambushed, you remember the story of the neighbor that I told you. So we will come back, after this, when we come back from the market. All right. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Omudia, with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafas and Anna.
Need lightning fast internet? Paratus has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Paratus' cutting edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through our high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Paratus today. Visit us online at paratus.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
Always pretend Paratus.
All right, welcome back. And a very good morning to you. It's a Friday morning on here on Unpacking the Day. So, and what we're looking at, what happened between, Donald Trump and Cyril Ramaphosa on that meeting. So, yeah, and we're looking at some of the issues that being highlighted by the media and by political analysts all over the world, looking at what has transpired in that meeting. So now the second issues we're talking about is about the breaking down of diplomatic norms that, so when normally these are choreographed kind of, stunts or whatever, or way or procedures, as I said, you expected to do certain things, polite greetings, respectful listenings, you go for private discussions, and then later a joint statement highlighting the shared goals. All that's what you used to. Do you understand? As a president going to another country, these are normally procedures that are followed, protocol that are followed. So now, so instead of that, what we witnessed was, as I said, other people referred to a diplomatic ambush, and remember the story of the fence that I was telling you, of a neighbor. So you invite your neighbor over to discuss fixing the fence, as I said, and amid conversation there, you blast them with accusations and about the crimes they never committed. Kind of like, while still actually discussing the fence, somewhere in the middle you just bring in something that they have never done, So that's exactly what happened when unverified, sensational claims were spotlighted in that Oval Office. So, yeah, and you may ask why is that actually such a big deal? Why do they make a big deal of that? So because when you break those unspoken rules, calling out a visiting leader with dramatized, unproven stories, so you destroy the atmosphere of trust and respect that let countries work together. So because exactly, but those are things that let the countries work together. So headlines, real with outrage, and suddenly South Africa reputations on the world stage takes a hit because of and it's not because of it. When now this has become a standard, it's not because of South Africa's its own policy or progress, but because of how would I call it? Because of a staged confrontation. And this was not, it's not the first time actually Trump is doing that. He did it with Zelensky, you know, of Ukraine. So where it was targeted. So, and once those decorum is lost, once those decorum is lost, it's much harder to rebuild, you know. So future talks risk being met with suspicions, because next time, you know, not only for South Africa, but even anyone who's going there, you kind of like, what surprise awaits me? What kind of surprises awaits me? So trust the roads and door closes. And the real issues now is not being dealt with, issues of trade, issues of investment, issues of health partnership, you know. So those get shoveled out aside by the fallout that happened. In that, those are the issues that were supposed to be discussed in that Oval Office. So, and that's why, you know, sticking to diplomacy, to diplomatic norm, it's not just about, you know, that, how do you call that word? What is the word? Etiquette. And etiquette? Yeah, it's not just about, etiquette. Etiquette. Etiquette? Etiquette? Etiquette. It's not just about those manners. Etiquette. Yeah, etiquette. So it's actually a foundation. It's a foundation that keeps international cooperation alive. That's why you have those way of doing things. So yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened. And the other issue also we see being discussed is that the South Africa, US South Africa relationship actually is really under strain. So there is a really fallout. So and how this actually meeting is hammering, not the word I'm looking for, it's hurting US and South Africa ties. So that's how some people actually sees that. So, and almost immediately the US announced cuts to aid and stated question whether South Africa will keep its special trade perks or under the, you know, the AGOA, the AGOA, the African Growth and Opportunity Act. So that is in questions, and definitely that would also affect, you know, maybe not directly us. So that's a big deal, because thousands of small business in the country, you know, thousands of business in South Africa, farmers, and manufacturers, count on a duty free, because this is about duty free access to America market. So they count on that. If they lose that, then it's not just about relations between the country. It's actually bread on the table. So you lose that, the price goes up, the order shrinks, the orders definitely will shrink, and there is a possibility jobs can disappear. So there could be job losses. So it is a very, very, very worrying relationship that is happening between South Africa. And in some way, if that happens, you know, it will ripple through to our neighbors, to us, to South Africa's neighbors, Botswana, Namibia, Zimbabwe, to SADC. So, yeah. So, but the other, it goes deeper. It goes deeper, by pushing the idea of resettling now the Afrikaner, refugees, put that in inverted comma, the refugees, inverted comma. In the US, the message shift from genuine humanitarian help, you know, to picking side in a made up racial conflict, you know? So remember that, as I said, that's a narrative that being, you know, it's a disinformation, a narrative that being, you know, propagated, and some communities or some country bite on it. Yeah. So, and now you actually have to kind of like, if you follow that, you have to pick side in terms of, okay, what is actually South African doing is something, but it's actually not happening. As I said, it debunked, by South Africa, by information from South Africa, by sources already, even the police data and things like that. It shows. So now, imagine if you heard your government was making special deal for one community based on unproven fears, while ignoring now the real struggles of many others. So it risks fanning old wounds and actually fueling division instead of unity. So that's so, and it's not just about politician posturing. Eh? It's not just about that. You have to think in terms of businesses. You know, it's businesses wondering if they, if their next container or of fruit will be clear customs. It's workers worrying about factories, their factories orders, and it's ordinary people seeing social tension rise between a false narrative that it was actually given an official weight in a country like US. So, yeah, that is the real cost of diplomatic missteps. So lives and livelihood get caught in the middle or caught in a crossfire. So because there's much, much, much more to lose, if this continues. So what also the media, all over the world says is that meeting actually missed the opportunity for South Africa. It was a missed opportunity for South Africa. So it's that it was a truly a wasted chance, wasted chances, because President Ramaphosa flew to Washington armed with a plan to talk energy partnership, to talk boosting, you know, technology investment. You know, an open door for South African export to the state market, to the United States market. So, and he couldn't showcase successes. He couldn't showcase the successes in other projects that are going in South Africa. Maybe say renewable powers, those emerging fintech in South Africa, and you know the world class. The world-class mining industries in South Africa. So he couldn't get opportunity. He couldn't get, you know, that opportunity to showcase those kind of success. But instead, so of talking about growth strategies and mutual wins between the two countries, what did he do? He spent his time on the defensive. What was he defending? Pushing back against a claim that has no basis in fact. So, and every minute spent refuting those false claim, those refuting those false white genocide allegation was a minute not spent pitching your project, you know. So you know, then there are so many. Yeah, it's a minute. Not a minute lost actually for you to pitch for joint, maybe joint solar farms or something like that, trade deal for wine, you know, that, you know, wine and fruit, there's a plant in South Africa. So collaboration in healthcare training program probably, and you know, so then, and those are time that you don't get back because you're spending time actually just refuting this nonsensical claim or allegations. So
my friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. So our time is about 15 minutes past the hour of 8. It's a Friday morning. And how are you doing? How are you doing this Friday? So we're looking at what happened actually between Ramaphosa and Donald Trump in that meetings, because that actually have been, you know, on airwaves everywhere in the world. And we're looking at some of the issues that came out of that meeting and what political analysts and the media talking about, especially on this meeting between these two presidents. So yeah, I was actually saying that when you focus now, when the focus was on that white genocide allegations, there was missed opportunity. So there were issue that people talking that there was an issue, a missed opportunity for South Africa to pitch for a number of things that they could have talked, but they couldn't because they spent much of the time defending themselves. It seems that, you know, the South African team may have been actually blindsided by President Trump's style. He's known for mixing formal meeting with some surprise stunts, you know, dim the light, video montages, bold public calls for evidence. So if you don't expect that, it is easy to get actually derailed. And they didn't expect that, you know, while it was just going on well and well and well. And then boom, he come up with something else, completely caught them by surprise. So maybe something to learn from that. Anyone, you know, other leaders probably should, we should have learned from, Zelensky's situation there. So when you meet a leader who thrives on unexpected preparation, has to go you have to prepare yourself beyond policy papers. So you need, you know, kind of like prepare your people for rapid response. You have some kind of like a rapid response team ready with clear fact sheets, you know, because you see when he was actually having all this showing, all this, you know, make sure that when you go, you're prepared, you know, kind of have some messaging clues to pivot now back to your agenda so that, you know, you bring back the person to the agenda that you want, and strategies to steer. You must also have that also strategies to steer conversation towards your shared goals rather than some of things like this. So yeah, in this case, South Africa, I think delegation missed a chance to shape the story around its achievement, and instead had to chase down a storyline that never should have taken hold. You know, that should have never taken hold. So moving forward, that lesson will be, I think it will be crucial for any higher stakes diplomatic encounter. And lastly, I think what lessons should South Africa or any other nations take from this diplomatic stumble? I think we talk about this. It's about, as I said earlier, preparation. People talk about that. When you go and see what is Trump, you should be prepared. Gone are the days when you could show up with a talking point memos and handshake. So today, diplomacy means controlling the story as much as it means signing agreements. So you have to control the narrative. You should be the one actually controlling the narrative. And what that means, even if it takes rehearsing for surprises, drafting clear, fact-packed responses that can be delivered on the spot. So you can... you can even run some kind of mock session before you come with unusual scenarios, you know, just to prepare yourself and make sure that, you know, every team member, it's a really switch on. I mean, you know, yeah. So when a meeting can flip from being polite to the live TV drama in seconds. So you need that level of readiness. Yeah. So,
Igor FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, Ray.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Oh, please, we are missing a lot on Igor FM, this side of the north.
Yeah, we understand that, Nem. We know that. All right. And at this point in time, we encouraging you just to if you have a smartphone, download that Eagle FM app. You will be able to follow us and listen to the radio. Yeah. For now, we understand that. Yeah.
But we're gonna retrieve the frequency, yeah, maybe on the radio itself.
Yeah.
When exactly are we going to retrieve the frequency?
Yeah. No, I am not in the position to be able to tell you that. Yeah. So I can't say that now. Right away. Yeah. Mm.
Okay, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, great.
Yes, people, we understand. We understand you. We definitely understand that. So, but what you can do, as we said, download the app, man. Download the app, and definitely you'll still be able to follow your programs, your favorite programs, and any other informations that we normally share, that we continue to share, that we continue to broadcast. Yeah. So, all right. So, yeah. So, as I said, when you're meeting, you know, so can suddenly just change like that. I think you need that level of readiness. So, yeah.
Eagle FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Hey, good FM, how are you? Mike?
I'm fine, man. And yourself?
Good.
Yeah.
You are seeing the show that was happening, eh?
Yeah.
The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, exactly. Ramaphosa was the apprentice. Ramaphosa was the apprentice, or what? How do you call it?
Yeah, apprentice, whatever. Yeah, no. You know, sometimes people, you know, colonial mentality for United States is just too much.
Yeah.
And they think they control everybody. And they think everybody reports to them.
Yeah.
They are the police of everyone.
Mm. And I don't like that kind of attitude.
You see, somehow, also we are a little bit, I don't know, when people call things diplomats,
yeah.
If somebody is diplomatically and he gets out of diplomacy, what you do?
Yeah.
Treat him as such.
Mm.
If you are the smart person like Lavrov, or Putin,
yeah.
He would have asked you, which one do you consider genocide between Palestine and the African, white Afrikaners?
Yeah.
Ask him that.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Then you see the guy who, you shift him out of the balance, you throw him away. The debate will even change immediately.
You know, that guy is unpredictable, man.
I know, man. Come on. Look, he's predictable. And then, look, he brings in Malema. Malema is not in government.
Yeah.
Yes. he brings in Malema. So the whole circus there was about Malema.
Mm.
Now, initially, when they were going, they knew that they were told already, that America is not happy about South African stance on Israel. They were told, they knew that ANC, they could not pay the salaries first, Then later, all of a sudden, they could afford to pay the salaries of everybody.
Yeah.
And America alleged that Iran, used South Africa to take the case to the ICJ.
Yeah.
Yes. So, all in all, everything was about Iran. You should change the shift from BRICS for us to agree with you. Now, you are going with a small thing of ACOA.
Mm.
And you know, when did America brought development to you, to Africa?
Well,
tell us exactly. Sometimes, I always also wonder sometimes, when did they brought, even this ACOA thing they talk about? Who benefits from ACOA?
Well, there are farmers and, like our meat farmer, our livestock, our meat farmers, they benefit from that.
Meatco was going bankrupt here. Here. What type of benefit do you benefit if you are going bankrupt? You are going down. How do you benefit?
Yeah. They open market.
They have just distorted the market.
Yeah.
Meatco could have benefited more locally.
Mm, it's true. Yeah, that's true.
Than the ACOA. What they do, they shift your balance by telling you that, okay, if you do business with us, then they put terms and conditions on how that meat should get there. Now, look at it. Meatco would have slaughtered the meat here.
Yeah.
And sell it to us. No transport involved. That's expensive, eh?
Yeah.
Now, for you to ship the meat from here to Europe, who pays for that? For transportation. The only thing they're allowing you is not, you're not going to pay the tariff or whatever they might call it, VAT, whatever. You get me? That's the only thing you are benefiting. But in terms of selling, you're just selling it the way it is.
Yeah.
Yes. You see? So, Meatco would have made more money locally.
Yeah.
So what they do, they destroy your market first so they can ship in their meat. What we eat here, if you go to ShopRite on this, all this is not our meat.
Yeah, no, much of that is not actually our meat. I have a story, maybe I can do that today, on how you just remind me of a story that I did, actually how the MIF underdeveloped Africa. So, it's something that maybe something that I can bring in today.
This business we do with Europe is not genuine business.
Yeah.
It is to destroy our business, our market. You understand?
Yeah.
So other thing, if you look at our farmers, we, South Africa, those white farmers, where is their market? They are just thinking their market is Southern Africa. You get what I
mean? Yeah.
And I think it's only white Afrikaners who can do farming properly. Who works in those farms?
Mm.
Secondly, when they were defending that white farmer genocide, why didn't they come up with it? Okay, fine, let's show Trump that the white farmers who were feeding black women they killed black people and feed them to the pigs. Is it?
And feed it to the pigs.
Yes, to the pigs.
But do we have evidence of those things?
No,
or just claims.
Those guys were in court.
Yeah.
Yes. Remember the thing? It was there. It's on TV. You can go on internet. It's there in the court of South Africa.
Mm.
The other guys who were put in the coffin. Is it?
Yeah.
Yes. It's like we are saying we want to claim that white. Look, even here. Who killed that Kasmo girl, that little young soul in Marientown? Just to pick up the leftovers, the thing that was left in the farm. The rejected ones. The guy ran over the kid.
Yeah.
You see how now you want to amplify something which you don't even see. America chased a lot of Africans from their soil.
Mm.
Illegal, they call them illegal immigrants, which is right. No problem. But if that thing, something happens in Africa, just pick up white people who are illegal in Africa.
Mm.
Pick them up and send them, you here the following morning.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Human rights.
It becomes
you to become human rights.
Yeah.
But they have done that. They ship people, a lot of people from whichever direction. It's their right, no, but can say that. The same America appropriates land without compensation. Actually, they are even worse. You see?
The other issue is that these people who actually end up in America, there's how many, 59 people that went or something?
Those 49.
Some of them are not even farmers.
All of them. Because they would have asked Trump, okay, fine, these farmers have come up to here. Can you tell us, did you get the audit? How many farmers have got 49 farms empty?
How can you leave your farm? Now would you leave your farm with your farms empty without people? Yeah.
So if you leave people on your farm, because then it's no longer your farm, because now you've denounced the citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are just people getting a free pass to become American citizens.
Yeah. No, but you look, they have made up stories. They are like that.
Yeah, I know these are made up stories.
Let's make up a story. Then we start fighting South Africa.
Yeah.
You get it? So what they are now negotiating there, they are telling Ramaphosa, remove this, remove that, don't go, don't align yourself with China. And even Rupert and those other guys who were caught, it was not Ramaphosa went with them. Trump instructed them that, no, come with these guys.
Yeah.
You see? In the White House, Stenhausen is using other opposition party. We didn't want those lots to get into power. And nobody questions that. Eh?
Yeah.
And you come back, you come to the same parliament, and you want to say, no, there's democracy. What is democracy? You say, no, EFF and the MK, they are participating, that's democracy. But you are insulting them. You are calling them lots. Eh? How do you... It's like you are telling me that, you know, we have got democracy, but we are doing democracy with sticks.
Yeah.
Eh? You see? You know, that's how white people, they have got no respect for themselves, actually. But they want to be respected.
When we put it that way.
You cannot insult a person when the first people retaliate, then you claim you start being a crying baby. Apartheid was there, and everybody knows America supported it. Even after apartheid, the governments of Africa after independence, the same governments which after independence, they are the ones who paid IMF for the debt, apartheid, colonial masters, colonial, whatever. No, I don't want to call them masters actually. evil people.
Mm.
Yeah, it's us who are paying for that. The same people, they were killing you with your bullets. You take the same money, the bullet they used to kill you with, to shoot your people with, with the bullet, then you go and pay that. Simply means you are forced to pay for your own death.
For your own death?
Yes. IMF is there.
Yeah.
You see? When Magufuli came into power, they were not happy. They knew that, look, Traore, the way he's treating them. Look what Russia have treated them. They have no point. Look, they thought they were so powerful. But Putin had the 20-year master plan to destroy Europe and is busy. I have to leave. Yeah. You see?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Those guys,
yeah.
The Ramaphosa, they just went there to defend, but they were just called to go and talk. To be told what to do. There's nothing negotiation there.
Yeah, no, they weren't prepared. They weren't prepared.
To be undermined like that you are telling another person, no, okay, switch off the light. This guy looks like he doesn't understand what he's talking about.
Mm.
Switch off the light. Let's see now. Let's watch the movie.
Yeah.
You get what I mean? That was an embarrassment. You could see Ramaphosa was a little bit confused.
Yeah.
Yes. There he was put. No, even in Ramona, he wants to talk about whatever they are negotiating. They were not negotiating, you know?
Yeah.
Ramona wants to talk about negotiation, but there's nothing. They did not do anything, you see? He was very quiet, you know? But to be honest with you, people must just... We shouldn't say, no, Trump is unpredictable. Trump is predictable. The only thing is,
White people, they always feel they are more superior than black people.
They're most clever.
They're more superior than others.
You mean they're most clever than black people?
Yeah, no, think... not really clever. They think not only black people. Look, they think they are more superior than any person on earth. You know? That's what they think.
It's debatable though. So when you have to think,
Zelensky like that. Look how they went and treated that Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
The way he treated Ledmondi was also the other prime minister, the president or prime minister of all these other countries. This one, the way the other guy went, you know, he doesn't have respect for people. But yeah. you expect to be respected. No, man, come on.
It's the strongest country in the world, man.
No, they are not strong. They are thin. What makes America strong? There's nothing America. America is not. America have never defeated Russia.
No, we don't. We're talking about economically.
Whether it's economically. Even their sanctions work. Mother of all sanctions is in Russia. What is happening to Russia?
One of the strongest. Yeah, let's put it that way. One of the strongest.
It may be, but it's not. Because if it was strong, Russia would have been rubble, nothing to date.
No, I'm telling you, one of the strongest. We're talking about America, China, you know, Russia.
One of the strongest. But they abuse power.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But it's fine. I hope when they come back, for those who went to America, South Africans like John Steenhuisen and Ramaphosa, them, I think they have got something to explain to the people. Because very soon you hear that we have to drop the case of ICJ.
Possibly.
Yeah, for us to give you a goa.
Yeah, exactly. Those are things that comes through. They will come through. Those things will come through.
No, but me, I'm just happy because our president, they are busy consolidating SADC.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the best. The refinery, they're talking about infrastructure integrating.
Yeah.
That's the best. Mm. If we do that, we don't need America. America will needs us.
Yeah.
We
have to be in the position where the American need us, not that we need them, but where we need both each other, you know?
I can guarantee you, if Ramaphosa would have just even acted like, okay, no, thanks, Mr. President. I think it have gone too far. Thanks. I thought we came to negotiate with how do we reset our relationship, but if this it goes to this point,
yeah.
I think we'll meet next time we are leaving. You would have seen that Trump would have started begging in South Africa.
Yeah.
Yes. They would have said, no. Because then he would have embarrassed thinking, oh, I think my behavior is not good towards other leaders.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Then the guy, no, okay, thank you very much. Sorry for, I thought we came for something. I thought we are not coming to debate Malema. We talk about Malema here. I thought we are coming to talk about the relationship between South Africa government to government.
Mm.
Now, if it's about the relationship, government to government is reduced to an individual. I'm sorry. Then we'll come back next time.
Mm.
Yes. Maybe we have to prepare to answer you on that one. Then leave.
All right.
Yeah, that's how you kill a person. Trump would have been put off completely or so, unexpected.
Mm.
Yes. No, thanks a lot.
No, thanks for coming through this morning, man.
Mm.
All right. It's a Friday morning here on Unpacking the Day. We were looking at what happened between South Africa's president, you know, and Donald Trump. Yeah, so on Wednesday, we're looking at what happened. And as I said, that event created some waves around the world and covered in a number of medias and, you know, so we decided to highlight some of the things that were obvious for us to see, and also to, you know, like as just the caller said, you know, I think our leader must train themselves to spot red herring and steer the discussions back to the shared goals, you know, like, you know, building resilient economies, cutting crime, for country like South Africa and Namibia. So, yeah, issues, real issues, improving education, promoting social unities and all those kind of things. So I think we need to, our leaders need to train themselves to actually spot that red herring. So, yeah. Yeah, and also focus on your strength. Focus on your strength. South Africa's story is one of diversity, innovations, and hard-won democracy. So instead of shrinking from tough questions and letting misinformation set the agenda, our leaders should lead with those strengths. You know, what is our strength? Showcasing cutting-edge, you know, things that we do. You know, the success of renewable energy, that is project that is going on, like in Namibia. So those are things that we, you know, South Africa has those vibrant cultural scene and all that. So, yeah, focus on your strength. So, and I think that that would make a difference. So, my dear listeners, as we've seen, this meeting was more than just a diplomatic misstep. I think it's a wake-up call about challenges of conducting diplomacy, if you like, in the age of disinformation and populist politics, if you can put it that way. So what are your thoughts? So should South Africa reconsider its approach to engaging with global powers like the U.S.? Should they? And how do we combat the spread of disinformation? I think that's the most important thing. How do we really combat the spread of disinformation in the international relationship and in the international arena? So that's something that we can talk about. How do we do that? So you're most welcome to come through. Our telephone number 08333 66091, 08333 66091. So you're most welcome to come through, have your opinion, and share your thoughts on that, and your contribution to the program. 08333 66091. That's the number to dial to get to me in the studio and to give you the air. Okay? All right. We'll be back after this minute.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Selfwoord Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
So very good morning to you if you're just joining us, and thanks for making us your number one choice this morning, and thanks for joining us if you're just joining us now. My name is Michael Chiavelli, and you are tuned in to Unpacking the Day. So we were just looking at the meeting, I mean the meeting between the event that took place, a meeting that took place between Cyril Ramaphosa and South African president, I mean South African president and Donald Trump. So as I said, that has become one of the
international topic that that is being discussed of what exactly happened, you know. So a diplomatic ambush, that's what done to Cyril Ramaphosa. And yeah, there are issues that been highlighted when it comes to diplomacy. So yes, if you want to come through, please do so. And the telephone number is 0833-66091. So what are we going to? You listening to Unpacking the Day, and we where we go into where we go beyond the headlines to uncover what is really happening in our region and also around the world. So we go quickly to another commercial break, and then when we come back, I actually want to look at this, how the MIF underdeveloped Africa. So we will be back. Stay tuned.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
All right, welcome back. So there's this very interesting story that come from the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research, which on May the 22nd, just yesterday, released a blistering analysis, which is really, really good, entitled How the International Monetary Fund Underdeveloped Africa. So there's a disclaimer. So whatever I'm going to, you know, to go through, it's not my own word. It's not my own word, not that of Eagle FM. So yeah, it's analysis. It's an analysis from this research institution, a Tricontinental. So, and it has just have, that analysis, how the International Monetary Fund, underdeveloped Africa. So now at first glance, you know, what we know is that the MIF, we tend to understand that, you know, MIF is built as Africa's financial lifeline. So it's understood to be like, this is actually, Africa's lifeline, financial lifeline. So by providing now loans, technical advice, budget support to countries, that have emerging economies, to emerging economies. So, but as our guest authors outline how the International Monetary Fund and underdeveloped Africa, as they have outlined that these loans are often shackled to strict conditions, right? So they are not life saving as it built, but they are normally shackled with a strict condition, force spending cuts. So they will force you to maybe cut your spending, deregulated markets, privatization mandates, you know. So, and the result of that, countries now get actually locked into higher interest repayments. And so once that they are locked into that higher interest repayment, that definitely you know, reduce their social services in the country, you know, and definitely reduce or delay the infrastructure development or project in those countries. So now, over the next few minutes, so let's unpick where this critic is coming from. Let's look at where it's coming from, what it aims to reveal, and why maybe look at why it does matter here in Namibia. And is the MIF helping us climb our poverty? Is it helping us to climb out of our poverty? Is it helping us to climb out of our poverty? Or is it keeping us on a treadmill? You know, is it keeping us on that treadmill, or is it helping us to climb out of poverty? Maybe it's the very same question that is it Omlemba who called? Oh, yeah. So the previous caller who said, you know, how did America develop us? So how are we developed? We're more poor now than before, probably. So now we're looking at, is MIF really helping us climb out of our poverty? Or is it keeping us in poverty? So let's look at what is this have to say. If we can look at now, just imagine. I'm creating a scenario so that we understand what they are talking about. So imagine you're carrying a backpack so heavy, yeah. So the backpack is so heavy, you can barely walk, all right? Now, and every time you take a step forward, so every time you take a step forward, the backpack gets heavier. So just when you take a step forward, so the backpack gets heavier. So that's what many African country face with MIF imposed debt and austerity. So that's what feels like. Let's hear from what they call her, and then we come back.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Morning, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
Fine.
Mm.
How are things?
No, things are okay. It's a Friday.
I did not hear your conversation on IMF, but the common things that I know.
Yeah, no, I'm just starting that. I haven't gone into detail yet. Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I heard you making some remark on that.
Yeah, no, I haven't gone into detail yet, but we were discussing
the... Okay, then to the lecture before I come in.
All right. So,
thank you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, no, you can go back and hear what we have to say, and then when you have enough, probably you can come through then. All right. So now, this is basically what happened when what many African countries face with MIF when they impose those impose debt and austerity. Now, after colonialism emptied the continent of resources and capital, the newly independent state turned to where did they turn to? So they tend now to institutions like the MIF for loans. Yeah, and all right.
Good FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself, man?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's Friday. One should be fine. Hello?
Can you hear me now?
No, I said it's Friday. One should be fine.
Yeah, it's Friday.
Yeah.
Not here in the office day. We're not fine. It looks like it's picking up again.
What is that picking up?
The east wind.
Oh, is it picking up?
Yeah.
So that means it's more hot or it's more cold?
More hot and dusty and windy and all of these other things.
Ah.
But I want to just make two comments. The first one is, I don't know why you guys are abandoning us.
We're not abandoning you. We're coming. Don't worry.
With the radio is still off.
Yeah.
Yeah, please come.
Yeah.
The second thing is, when it comes to this whole Donald Trump and Ramaphosa situation.
Yeah.
I don't know why people are worked up or people are, what is the word, surprised. Mm. Maybe a better word. Why are they surprised? You know, the U.S., historically, they and the U.K., they termed or they labeled the ANC when they started out as a terrorist organization.
Yeah.
The U.S. opposed resolution the first time. They opposed resolution 235 for Namibia.
Yeah, yeah, right? That's true, yeah.
They have historically shown that they support racist colonizers.
Yeah, they have been supporting that apartheid government for years, yeah. Mm.
Why are we surprised? Why even get onto a plane to go to America to reason with somebody that opposed your freedom? They heard about all the atrocities, yet they approved. Why? And when he, and even if he did go, when he was there on the world platform, this Ramaphosa, what stopped him from reminding the world about who the U.S. is?
Yeah.
So if it was me, I would have, you know, I would have reminded the world about that history, and then I would have said, is it any wonder that today you are making these accusations against us? These are your friends, because there are South African, black South African children, families that are dying of AIDS, right? And have been dying of AIDS. You care nothing for them, but these are your friends and family members. It is fine if they come to you. We only ask that if they come to you, because apparently we are killing them, then bring for us our black brothers who are being killed by your police day in and day, the George Floyds and the, he should have simply countered with that accusation as well. He was not there to defend and explain. Once you defend and explain to somebody who has no authority over you, you give them authority, because now you're explaining to them. You are being accountable to them. Why does he give his authority over to these people? And I only say this because I happened to hear you speaking this morning, just by chance. And, you know, I wanted to comment because I remember that I was saying to myself, I hope the Namibian government and the representatives of the Namibian government will not take the same stance. If the person has no authority over you and you are sovereign unto yourself, then why allow that person to say anything, to put you in a corner where you have to defend yourself?
Mm.
Just counter with an accusation, because his accusations are false, but yours can be verified. They are historical fact. You know what I mean?
They kind of went, when he went, they kind of went there to remedy the situation, but I think he wasn't prepared in the right way. As you said, when you go there, you know already what is the situation between you and the U.S.
Yeah.
And he wanted actually maybe to play the peacemaker, but it didn't turn out well. Maybe thinking of what he can lose in terms of U.S. market and all that.
I think what should happen is there should be a new law.
Mm.
Anytime a president, and this should be maybe a Namibian law as well, if the president, the person who holds the highest office in the country, if the president does anything or allows anything that infringes on the dignity of their office, they should immediately step down, because that means that they do not understand the concepts of authority. They do not understand the concepts of sovereignty. They don't understand these concepts. And what happens is that you going there representing a nation, you bring that nation into disrepute, or you bring that nation shame.
Yeah.
Right? Because you, for instance, I'll give an example. If any president stands up of a country and they go to London for a funeral and they are put on a bus, they should step down.
Mm.
They don't have the mentality to be a leader. They don't have the mentality to be a president because they got onto a bus like a bunch of school children, right? While others, they arrived there in the Rolls Royces. They arrived there in their private cars. Even me, myself, in my capacity, I would have never gotten on the bus. I would have rather rented a bike. I would have rather done whatever, but I would never have gotten on that bus. I understand the concepts of authority. I understand the concepts of sovereignty. I understand the concepts of leadership. If you as a president don't understand that, yeah, you have no place being a president. What you are just is you are colonization waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So this is what Ramaphosa doesn't understand. Ramaphosa should step down immediately because he went there with him holding all the resources. He went there to explain himself. For what? For false accusations from a person that you know historically did not support your struggle, did not acknowledge your struggle. In fact, they called you a terrorist, right? Yeah. Like they call not the Mujahideen, these people, these so-called Middle Eastern guys who are going about with their Sharia laws and things.
Yeah.
So that is a problem. That is what I have a problem with. African leaders that do not respect themselves, their country and who they are. African leaders who don't understand the concepts of authority, sovereignty, and leadership. Those people should never be presidents. You cannot go and sit there, and then a guy even hits you on your knee, or hits you. If he hits you, punch him immediately. Why must you do that? Because when he hits you, he doesn't hit you personally as a person.
Yeah.
He's hitting a nation.
Yeah, exactly.
He's making you look like a small boy. He's not making you look like a small boy. He's making a nation look like a small boy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe it was Rupert Murdoch or whoever, or what is this Rupert of South Africa that sent him, right? But he should not have gone. And his advisors should, exactly.
I mean, if he would have gone, he should have prepared better, I think. So, and he didn't read the room, actually. So he didn't read the situation well. They haven't, you know.
Did he need to be able into the room to predict what Donald Trump was going to do?
You didn't. You should actually, you know exactly how the situation is going to be.
You saw what they did to Zelensky.
Yeah.
And still you went.
Yeah.
And Zelensky is their brother. He's a fellow white like them. You, who is a stranger, maybe a neighbor, you are going to be treated differently. And if it was me, I would have said to him, okay, fine, you are saying that there are 1,000 bodies buried here. Let's go to South Africa. Come and show me.
Yeah.
Come and show me where. Point them out to me and come and show me. Because you have all your resources. Let's go to South Africa. I would have even stood up in the middle of the interview and said, let's go now. What's the problem? Let's go. He would never have... Donald Trump is not somebody that you deal with on a diplomatic level. Because Donald Trump has been brought in. He's an actor. All of them are actors, actually.
Yeah.
And they work together. What Donald Trump is doing with the tariffs was written in Klaus Schwab's book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. I think it's on page 19 or something. Have you read that book?
I know I haven't. I have seen the book, but I haven't read it. So
please read it because if you read it, you understand a little bit more of where they want to take the world and why Donald Trump is doing what he's doing. The tariffs, even the cyber attacks and all the things, those things are in that book.
Mm.
If you want to hide anything from a black man, put it in a book and see. You'll never find it.
Yeah.
So
someone said that.
Yeah, exactly.
He said that if you want to make a black man a poor man, put whatever make him rich into the book. He will never find it.
Yeah. Anything that you want to hide from him, put it in the book. Yeah. That's what Klaus Schwab did. Yeah. Donald Trump is not acting crazy. Yes, he is what is termed an agent of chaos.
Mm.
He's there to destabilize and create the chaos, not for you and me, to destroy the U.S., to destroy the dollar. That is what he wants. That's what he's working for. Go read the book. So I don't know why you think going to, I mean, Ramaphosa, not you now. Ramaphosa thinks going to the U.S. and sitting there is going to change anything. The man is following a script. If you want to change what the man does, change the script. Yeah. You can't change the script, though, because you didn't write it. So that's where his first mistake was. But maybe it was not a mistake. It was intentional.
Yeah.
But the people that are the South African citizens and so on, what should they be doing? They should be calling for his head. They should be saying, step down. Not you. You don't have the dignity, the integrity, the wisdom, the knowledge. You don't know anything. Mm. You are a capitalist. Remain in your corner. And if you maybe went there for your private gain, you are negotiating for your private. Maybe McDonald's said, "Hey Ramaphosa, you can no longer have a franchise in South Africa."
In South Africa, yeah.
And then he wanted to protect his money. Maybe that's the real reason he went there.
Actually,
I don't know.
Much of that could have been that. Much of the interest of these that
he owns the franchise rights for the whole continent. So he's the one. If you want to start a McDonald's, you go to Dr. Ramaphosa. McDonald's gave him that. That's why if I think it's the whole continent, but certainly South Africa is the whole of South Africa. So if you want to start a McDonald's, that's what he was doing. He was not there for the interest of the nation. He was there for his personal financial interest. Even Trump mentioned, you've got $7 billion, I'll burn it all. What does he mean? What does Trump know that you and I don't know about Ramaphosa? Anyway, that's all I got to say, Mike.
No, thanks for coming through, man.
Yeah.
All right.
Please, we need also Eagle FM in Walvis Bay. Don't leave us don't leave us behind just because we have potholes. Don't look down on us. Because our potholes are getting other day I saw a whole small car those small cars, it's not the Figo, man, the other one.
Yeah.
I think it was a Nissan Micra standing in the whole pothole. The thing was standing in a pothole.
Seriously?
Yeah. It's bad here. It's really, really bad. Things are worse. Yeah.
So hopefully with money will be released soon and probably get everything fixed, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, we're about to make Umlemba the mayor so that things can get done.
Yeah. Get people who likes to get dirty anyway. Not the one who's just having suits in the office, you know?
Dirty hands, honest work.
Exactly.
Clean hands, dirty work.
Yeah. Great, all man. Right. So.
Bye.
Mm. All right. Anonymous. All right. Our telephone number, 833-366. That was our earlier story. We looked at the meeting between Donald Trump and Ramaphosa and what has transpired. Yeah. That was been the first, our first item on the show. Our time, it's about 6 minutes past the hour of 9:00 and, we go until 9:30. So, what we're looking, I was looking at this is a very interesting take and analysis that was done. As I said, I'm not claiming to say what is being said here. So I'm just probably putting it in my own words. But basically, a take that analysis, of MIF, it's an analysis entitled "How the International Monetary Fund Underdeveloped Africa." And it's looking at. I was just now giving you a little bit of a background, and I was giving an example of that. When you imagine you are carrying a backpack so heavy, and you can barely walk. You know, it's so heavy in your back and you can barely walk. So every time now you take a step forward, you know, the pack actually get heavier. So you get heavier and heavier and you will find it hard now to move forward. And, that's just an example to say that's what many African countries face with MIF, imposed, debt and now, and we know what colonialism did. So it started with talking about what colonialism did, emptied the continent of resources and capital. And now, when we got independence, so what happened? Our state now turned to institution like the IMF, you know, so for loans,
Now, so, and what happened is that those loans come with strict conditions, condition in the way that, you know, make us now cut our social services, you know, and opening market, then we start opening market to foreign goods. So, and also dismantling the government regulation that often stalled industrialization and deepened poverty. So it opened the door to all this in a way that is actually deepened poverty. So let's look at the first issue they highlighted. This is now the ballooning, you know, ballooning of debt. So now, by early 2025, some countries, so its total debt more than twice the size of its entire economy. It's more than twice the size of its own economy, of its entire economy. So, it's not only it's not just Sudan. Across sub-Saharan Africa, average public debt doubled from 30 to 60% of GDP in less than a decade in most countries in Southern Africa. So, and you know what that do? The higher debt forces nations to spend huge chunks of their budget. So now they are forced now to spend to spend quite a lot of their budget on their interest payment. Now what does do? That leaves now little. So that's quite a lot, a big jar spent on servicing your debt, repaying your debt, your interest repayment, and that's leaving a little for other social development like schools, hospitals, roads. And that's why we don't move. We are just in that circle. That's why we found where we are. Sometimes there are these things that we're not really paying attention to, and we start actually shouting on the government and all that. Yes, right, we are. But there are other really, really issues like these that we need to start talking about. So now, when the other issue they talk about, when debt grow too large, you know, the MIF insists on austerity, cutting government spending to prove you can actually balance your book. So, but actually in practice, that means you start cutting your health budget, you start cutting your teacher's salaries or whatever, or school budget, you start, you know, postponing your energy projects. So, and because you need to service your debt. In 2022, more than 20 African countries spend more on debt interest than on their healthcare. So the result of that, what would be the result of that? It's quite obvious. So you have clinic without medicines. You have broken school buildings that need some renovation. You know, maybe stalled, you know, power plants. You have plans that you want to do that you don't. So that's... It's when you look at that, that's hardly the foundation of any thriving economy. So these are some of the things they highlighting, that that's how it actually crippled many of the African, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, emerging economies. So now, the other issue is that the MIF loans are not just cash. Okay, they are not just cash. They come with some strings attached. You know, maybe the country must deregulate its market, maybe privatize certain services, or or lower trade barriers or something. So they must, or there's always this, you know, some strings attached to these loans. So this one size fit all approach often undermines the local industries. It could be forcing now, if we talk in terms of farmers, you know, that could force farmers to compete with cheap imports that come into the country. So our small business, our entrepreneurs actually to compete with all the, now, say for example, you should have been having, local entrepreneurs who actually, that's a repair cell phone. But next door, you have actually also an Indian who is actually selling the same thing that you do, and also repairing, you know, exactly as you do. So this is what they're referring to. So, and that actually, that undermines, local industries. It's also discouraging, in a way, home, as they refer to as a home growing manufacturing. So because, you know, competing with cheap imports that's coming in your countries. And this, as I said, as they said that MIF loans, so they come also with those strings attached, which ask your country to do certain things. Last, as I said, deregulate maybe your market and things like that, privatize certain things. So, and that would affect, definitely has impact on your economy. So, and worse, when the government actually lose control over their own policy decisions, that could be now, here you have maybe the government actually lose control over their own policy decision, and then they lose the ability to you lose the ability actually to chart development, you know, you lose that to chart your own path, your development path that's suited to your own people. So yeah, those are some of the things that they highlighting in this analysis. So so, but there's also a talk that has been overdue. Something that I also did. I talked to, when was it? Was it Wednesday or Tuesday, when I talked to Kadila, to Emmanuel Kadila. So the building of African financial institutions, you know, that is something overdue, rather than, you know, running to MIF. You know, why don't we build our own financial institution, a continental central bank, an African monetary fund. So, and also even Pan-African stock exchange. So a regional solution could actually tailor lending practices to Africa reality. So because they know, the Africa's reality, and support Africa's or continent infrastructure projects without those harsh cuts and keep more and without those, that then we'll be able to keep more resources circulating on the continent. So this is something that that should be welcomed. These are alternatives on the horizons that should be welcomed, you know, and the African continent of free trade area is another example. So if by boosting actually extra African trade, countries can grow markets and reduces dependency on external creditors. So, and we should be putting more effort on those initiatives and alternatives in Africa. So, and the other thing is the human story. They also look at that amid these macro numbers, everyday people still live in the shadow of this debt burden. You know, it's not just numbers that you hear. they have actually a direct impact on the life of people in those in the continent. So I'll give an example of look for example you have Subi, okay, a small town trader in DRC who moves goods and even diamond across the war-torn border. So by the time those diamonds reach Europe, millions in profit have been made, but none of it for her community. So of that, there's nothing that he himself actually or her community actually is profiting from. So that the real cost of underdevelopment. Okay. So.
You got a film? Good morning.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike, for coming back, but, looks like I want to talk to you today. I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
In the past on this show of yours, I've asked and I've stated that if Namibia, for instance, or any African country which has resources, Namibia has access to gold, it's got access to copper, it's got access to a lot of minerals, right?
Yeah.
If Namibia were to open up their own mine, especially let's say a gold mine, and it's 100% owned, and they would then start to pay all of their debt by the ton of gold. Tell me, what effect then can the IMF loans do if once they're paid off? Because as soon as Namibia goes ahead and says, no, we're not going to comply with any of these of your, stipulations, here's your money back.
But where do you
money in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, we have the money in the ground, but where are you going to get the money out of the ground?
I guarantee you, we have, Namibia right now has the money to start its own mine. You only need $1 billion, right? And that would be a small scale mine, the size of maybe, not small, but I mean, it would be the size of maybe Navajap or Langa Heinrich or something, right? Mines that are really generating a lot of money. So, if you know that you have a B2 gold, near Shuarongo, that means there's gold in that area. You can buy up the neighboring farms or whatever it is, and start mining. You can easily do that with $1 billion, $1.5 billion. Just take it away from your current budget, what you currently have. Take it from somewhere. You don't have to go and borrow it and then build it, because your money is in. Once you've opened that wallet, you can pay off all of these things and you don't need the other people. Because this is the reason why we have all of these issues of the homosexual agenda. Mm. It's because IMF says, hey, if you don't support the homosexuals, we're not giving you money.
Yeah.
So I want to know, can you please invite somebody from the ministry? We have a new minister. Can you invite somebody from the Ministry of Mines and Energy to come and ask the question, why does the country not build its own mines?
Actually,
there's no risk involved.
Yeah, no, I have to have an appointment with him, because I was talking to him at one point. He said, call me in a month. I'm just in the office now. So yeah, no, I will have an appointment with actually the minister himself, because I talked to him.
Yeah.
So that
we want to know. Let him come and answer these questions, because we want to know, why is it that they cannot invest in themselves? Why must other people always be investing in us and then taking advantage of us? When are we going to start investing in ourselves?
Yeah. So I was always thinking that, that even if maybe we find that investing in mining, for example, as a country, maybe it's an expensive exercise. Why don't we take over a period of time, and then, hold shares in that mine, maybe 20%, in a few years, 10%, 40%, 50%, until we own that 100%.
Why do you want to co-own something that is yours? Why don't you want to own it 100%? Why do you say it's expensive?
Well, normally you hear that explorations and all those the investment that goes into that, that's why we have a small share in the in that resources. Yes, so there are those reasons that the government doesn't want to use the taxpayers' money to, you know, to do that. And it might lost. Let's say, for example, government did what Shell did, and in the end, you find that it is not viable, and you spend millions and millions.
It would have been worth it.
Yeah.
If government did what Shell did and they lost the money in the exploration, it still would have been worth it, because government is then using Namibians to, and training Namibians in the regard of the oil and gas industry, and then they themselves are going to be more knowledgeable. Even if they don't end up working in Namibia, they will go outside of the country, and guess where the money will come back to,
yeah.
Right? They will. So it would have still been profitable. Because just think about this: you are telling me we cannot invest in ourselves because we are afraid of losing, but we can build toilets for 2.7 million. How many toilets was it? Four or whatever.
Mm.
We can buy condoms for how many millions it was, right? Money that you are guaranteed not to go, to get back, that you know you are throwing away. We are investing 13 billion or how many billion now,
yeah,
in students and pupils and in an education system that we know at the end of the year we're all going to be crying and disappointed. Those are sure losses.
Mm.
So why are you afraid of a potential loss, but you are not afraid to invest in a sure loss? What you are going to lose for sure, you are going to lose it, right?
Yeah.
You are not afraid of it. But the one where you might potentially win, where you might potentially generate an income as a whole for the country,
mm,
that you're afraid of.
But we're a bit behind. Okay, no, someone said actually you can buy the knowledge. If you said, I don't have knowledge, get people who can do that for you. Anieli said, we don't have the technical now, but someone actually said, no, that's not the point, because you can buy the knowledge. You can buy the expert. You can be able to do that. So, and in the long run also send your people in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe with regards to oil and gas, but when it comes to mining, we have the knowledge. When it comes to mining, we definitely have the knowledge. There are people here that have been mining for 30 years, almost his whole life. He was only doing mining. We are very, very knowledgeable when it comes to mining. Anybody who says that we don't know what we're doing when it comes to mining, that person is an idiot. It's a lie. The Namibians know how to mine. We know how to run mines.
Yeah.
We do run mines. We know how to operate them. We are we are experts, in fact, right? We are knowledgeable to the level of a world-class expert. The reason why these people can come here and they can start their mines and all they do is that they throw one or two stones in a bush, five engineers come out, right? And then they pay them whatever they want to pay them. Okay, the payments are not too bad, but I mean, why they can invest and put their trust in Namibians,
mm,
who are the experts, and they get more than the money out, right? So why can you not do the same? Why can't you put the same trust? Pay them handsomely, pay them well, and I am guaranteed that those guys who are used to the private sector, who are used to performing, they will just continue to perform.
Yeah.
The only thing that maybe a problem might be corruption, but even in the private sector, there is a level of corruption sometimes. There's a level of kickbacks and whatever. But when it comes to that is very, very small,
mm,
and almost non-existent, but compared to our normal government tenders and stuff. But when it comes to expertise, you cannot tell me that those people don't know. We are experts, Mike. We know what we're doing. Some Namibians, a lot of us are also now starting to go out of the country as expats to run greenfields projects and to go and run projects off from the ground. So whoever says we're not experts doesn't know what they're talking about. That's an idiot. Don't listen to them.
All right.
Okay, thank you for
coming through again. Eh?
I promise I won't come back.
No, me. It's all right. I mean, it's almost the end of the show. Anyway, have a great weekend, man.
Okay, same to you. Bye.
All right. So, yes, it's about 29 minutes past the hour of 9. And just before we come to the end of the show, so the Villages, today's edition is out. So quite interesting stories that you may find in that. Female, the stories that's leading the headlines is the female lead IUM 2025 graduation, about 73.3% of graduates are female. Ooh, we have to be really, no, we have to be very, the boy child, what is happening to the boy child? You know, the International University of Management, IUM, held its winter convocations on May 22nd, 2025 at the Windhoek Country Club Resort, graduating 2,501 to the market. So, yeah, that's actually taking place yesterday and today. It's two days event took place yesterday, and we live streamed that one. And it's also taking place today. That's a story. Maybe let's find out what's happened. What happened to the boy child? 73.3% of graduates are female. Something is going on with a boy child. Maybe we are neglecting him. We're telling them, you're nothing. You shouldn't be what. All right. So the other story that you can find in there is the financial sector encouraged to follow South Africa's cybersecurity standard. So it has been recommended that Namibia companies in the financial sector follow South Africa's latest legal standard for cybersecurity in the financial sector. So if you want to know what is the South Africa's latest legal standard for cybersecurity, well, order. So get subscribe so that you can get your copy of the edit of the Eagle FM. I mean, not of Eagle FM, of the Villager. So all what you need to do, send your WhatsApp, send a message, send your number and your email to 081-200-4144. So once you've done that, you then subscribe to get the Villager every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So another headline in the Villages: Church donate 1 million to farmers in 4 regions. So the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the ELCA, through its Department of Missions Diaconia, has donated 1.7 million, that's Namibian dollar, to assist farmers in the Kavango East, Ohangwena, Oshikoto, and Oshana regions who have been severely impacted by prolonged drought and recent flooding. It's good to see a church also chipping in. So that's another story there, and a number of stories that you can definitely follow if you subscribe. So our time is about 33 minutes past the hour of 9, and that means it brings us to the end of our unpacking the day today. Thanks for those who come through, who contributed on the show. And please do that. Please continue to do that. And also continue to listen to Eagle FM, on the programs that are coming up. So, and coming your way now is, Mind the Gap, with Helmut. From me, until Monday,
We see each other again tomorrow on Mind Matters. Goodbye and have a great weekend ahead. Don't do what I wouldn't do. And if you do, name it after me. Goodbye.
Omudia, with the Kirokabuna, E. Matina, Omjo, Chicago Shafatana, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuikimoshiwana, E. Moyao, or Tango Kotisamwini, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombidom Banawa, Orangika, Saitanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupira, Mo Ikelefem Media House, Way 20 Mimeha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki wimwe po yomo programa detu moambo dengera selma konara heta tuimu datu datu heari hamano tano o niyaji Eagle FM the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.5.